Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to the Cosmo Happy Hour. It's everything you would talk about with your best friends, from sex to celebrity to entertainment.
From the editors of Cosmopolitan.com, this is the Cosmo Happy Hour with Alisa Benson.
Welcome back to another episode of Cosmopolitan.com's Happy Hour podcast. I'm Alisa Benson, and I'm so excited to be in a room full in the Cosmopolitan.com Unicorner as we speak with a room full of entertainment pop culture experts. And together today, we are going to count down the 10 most important things that happened in pop culture in 2015. And by most important, I really mean what we wanted to talk about today. Most important by Cosmo standards. So let me introduce you all to Patty Greco, Cosmopolitan.com's entertainment editor. Hi, Patty.
Hello.
Is this like, this is sort of like, as an entertainment editor for the site, you oversee all that entertainment coverage. This is sort of like your like magnum opus.
Yeah, I feel like we couldn't even like narrow the list down to 10. Thank God for you, because you helped like keep us in order.
Well, at the end of the day, we were just like cutting off things that were majorly important. We're like, let's just talk about this.
Yeah, it's really,
yeah. So everyone's about to find out. I am also here with Alex Reese. Hi, Alex.
Hi. Love a top 10 list. Very excited.
I think you were actually more excited about the top 10 list format than
love
the...
It.
Exactly. But Alex, you guys have heard him in his sexy British accent here before. He's our pop culture writer and editor. Eliza Thompson, who's our associate entertainment editor. And every time you're on the podcast, Eliza, I call out that you are also a contestant on Jeopardy.
It's true. I lost. I feel like I have to say I lost, but I did.
That's so woman of you. You were on Jeopardy.
You were on Jeopardy. That's the whole story.
Own it.
Exactly.
I wasn't on Jeopardy.
Smart enough to get on Jeopardy.
Right. It was fun. Every time Eliza's on, I basically want to spend the entire episode talking about that. But we have 10 important pop culture moments to count down, so I will not spend any more time bugging you about Jeopardy. But I'm also very excited to introduce our special guest today, Danielle Henderson, who's a freelance writer for Cosmo and a bazillion other places. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, guys.
Thanks so much for joining us.
I'm so excited. You're
excited.
What's good?
Oh, that's like a spoiler.
Oh my God,
I've been saying it all year.
All year, exactly.
Hi, Grandma. What's good?
So exactly, we're already getting ahead of ourselves. There are so many things we're excited to talk about. But so we are counting down those 10 most important moments of the year. And so number 10 on our list, I think it's fair to say that this has been the year of Taylor Swift and Taylor Swift Squad. So Eliza, can you kind of walk us through why, you know, 1989 didn't even come out this year, but yet it felt like it did?
Well, I think the main reason for that is because she went on her tour this year and then instituted this process of bringing out 8 million of her friends, which you went to the show, right?
I went to the show.
Did you have any special guests?
I literally went in Minneapolis, and there were no special guests. It was like the one tour day. I know. It was like, Taylor Swift doesn't care about Minneapolis, or like
that's
no other celebs.
Brutal.
Yeah, so I think there were only a handful of tour dates that didn't have a guest, and I was at one of them.
Oh my God, I would want a discount.
I know,
like a refund.
I know.
She couldn't put Lena Dunham on a plane for
I know,
one
exactly,
show?
Exactly. I think that there were 3 dates in Minneapolis, and I don't think there was a guest for any of them.
Wow. Well, she had 2 main methods of doing this. There was the style runway walk, where she would bring out people like Lily Aldridge and Martha Hunt, who, like, can't sing, obviously, because they're models.
Right.
And then she would bring out another person, sometimes that made sense, to sing their big song with her. Like, for example, at the show I went to with Patty, we saw Nick Jonas do Jealous. But then other times, her choices were a little more questionable. Like, she brought out Fetty Wap at one point to sing Trap Queen, which was just kind of, like, I mean, obviously he was a huge entertainment story this year too, but then you just have to imagine like Taylor Swift on the phone with Fetty Wap and like how does that conversation happen?
Right. Right. Questionable because what's the connection
right.
to Taylor Swift?
And was there, I mean, I think that was a lot of the conversation around this. Personally, I was obsessed with noticing how every time she would post an Instagram after the show, I was like, how many ways has she found to say, like, this was mind-blowing or this was amazing? That was, I got really interested in, like, her mixing up her captions to sort of say so-and-so. Because, you know, she couldn't be like, oh, yeah, this person was fine. My guest yesterday was okay. You know, everything had to be the best thing ever. But I think there was a lot of conversation around whether or not the guests made sense. Why were they there? Who did you guys feel most surprised by on the tour? I felt most surprised by having no guest star at all.
But well, now that I'm hearing it, Fetty Wap. I mean, what?
Yeah, that was a weird one.
Matt LeBlanc was there at one point.
Oh,
right?
Oh, that was in the Staples Center, and she also had Chris Rock that night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That was during the like runway walk. Yeah,
there was some real off the wall choices.
The parody was probably my favorite thing to come out of this whole thing.
That's
although
true.
I can't quite remember examples, but it was this parody where it's like, please welcome to the stage, like the Virgin Mary. Like
it was like, please welcome to the stage my two best friends, Gigi Hadid and the Blair Witch. Like my favorite one. I occasionally just quote to myself.
Right.
Or right now.
Right, or right now. That's so good. So this was definitely the year of Taylor Swift's I don't know why I just said that. Taylor Swift's friends.
Yeah.
The year of Taylor Swift's plural. But, and they just made a big announcement that she is streaming her concert live on, it's a concert special live on Apple Music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So I'm obviously, like, a huge Taylor Swift fan and will probably, like, live tweet that for my own enjoyment and maybe also for Cosmo's. But segueing right out of Taylor Swift and onto our number 9 thing on the list, another sort of girl power moment. Patty, can you talk to us about the Jennifer Lawrence pay gap essay heard around the world?
Yes. So in October, Jennifer Lawrence wrote for Lenny Letter, which is Lena Dunham's newsletter with Jenny Connor. She wrote an essay about the fact that she got paid less than her male counterparts for American Hustle. And this all comes out of something that happened in December, which was the Sony hack, where we first discovered that she got paid less than guys like Bradley Cooper and Jeremy Renner. So she wrote this essay, and it sort of wasn't, like, you didn't really get any sense of why she got paid less, like the machinations that go on behind the scenes and what happens with agents. But she says really powerful things. And I hate the word powerful because it's cheesy, but here we go. I would be lying if I didn't say there was an element of wanting to be liked that influenced my decision to close the deal without a real fight. I didn't want to seem difficult or spoiled. So I think what people latched onto there was this idea more broadly of how women, whether they're celebrities or not, talk about what they deserve or what they earn in the workplace. I also like this. I'm over trying to find the adorable way to state my opinion and still be likable. Fuck that. I don't think I've ever worked for a man in charge who spent time contemplating what angle he should use to have his voice heard. It's just like that really, because, you know, there was a part of me, and then I'll stop babbling, that was like, okay, cool, J-Law, which she acknowledges in this. Like, I'm sorry that you didn't get $20 million, but instead $15
million. Right.
But the principle still stands, and the whole, like, thing about, you know, how women might negotiate differently was still powerful.
And I have, like, actually so many questions about this
okay.
that I'm going to ask you all right now. The first is, I had kind of forgotten about the connection to the Sony hacks. Is that when, I mean, is that how Jennifer Lawrence, we assume, found out this information? Like, the same way we all did?
I'm assuming it, but I don't actually know that for sure. I mean, the essay suggests to a certain extent that she sort of knew and wasn't fighting, but it doesn't actually get clarified. And for me personally, not to have a negative spin on this whole thing, it's actually something I wish were clarified in the essay, because the essay had to work in those sort of softer terms that celebrities often have to operate in so as not to get blacklisted or not to seem ungrateful. But she didn't actually say, here is my agent. When an agent negotiates, X, Y, and Z happens. You kind of got more of a flavor of that when Bradley Cooper and Jeremy Renner jumped in. Bradley Cooper says, usually, like, you're not involved with that. You have people who do it for you. Jeremy Renner, of course, had to be the more dickish version of that, bless him, which was, I don't deal with that. It's not my problem. Well, he didn't say that, but that was more his
tone. Yeah.
And so I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I guess I wish it were answered more, because that is the backroom dealing type of stuff that we don't really get to hear about.
Right. And that was sort of, you answered the next question I wanted to ask, which I think it's so important that she came out and, you know, said all of these things. And I think exactly what you said, she sort of hit the nail on the head in terms of the discomfort and not wanting to seem unlikable, that I think is real for so many women. But I did sort of wonder, like, Jennifer Lawrence isn't the one that's like sitting in a room negotiating the way like I sit in a room and negotiate if I ever get a new job, you know? So I did sort of wonder about that. Like, I want more information about that. I think it's important.
And I think lost in this whole conversation is putting responsibility on these agents who aren't going to bat or fighting as hard for, or even starting with a number that is fair in the first place when they go in to negotiate for these women. Oftentimes, women are represented by male agents. Oftentimes, they're represented by female agents who also represent men. And they know better than anybody else
what everyone is getting paid. Right. In some ways, that should be an advantage for these people.
Yeah.
It's also interesting, I think, with the entertainment industry, because, you know, there is a lot of conversation around, like, how bankable a star is. And I think there's a feeling that you can put a number on someone's head. You know, somebody like Jennifer Lawrence, especially, that has had so many movies that have performed so well, which in some ways, again, I sort of feel like this should make it easier for you than for us, like, regular people. Whereas, like, I don't really know how much money my job brings to the table. I don't know how profitable this podcast is. You know what I mean? So I think that, I don't know, I felt like it, and this is maybe always the case, I felt like that was such an important moment, but to me it almost like raised as many questions as I felt like it answered.
Right.
And that disparity between the amount of money she was making, like what you were saying earlier, the difference between $20 million and $15 million, it doesn't seem like a big deal, but in the scope of a regular woman's life, that's the 77 cents that they're not seeing.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, the difference between 77 cents that you're making versus the dollar that a man is making ends up being about that much money, like that big of a difference over the course of your career or the course of your job. And that, I think, was a good way to illuminate that for, like, working women everywhere. Just, hey, if you don't have anyone standing up for you, if you're not negotiating on your own, you're missing out on money, whether it's $5 million or $5,000. That's a lot of money.
Absolutely. So moving on to number 8 on our list, we could not have a Cosmo podcast about the top entertainment moments of the year and not talk about 50 Shades. Although, Danielle, I want you to sort of walk us through this, but I have to say, like, part of me is like, that happened this year?
I know. It feels like a century ago.
Yes.
Right? Because the lead up to that movie was so intense, starting with the fact that they cast, like, Don Johnson and Melody Griffith's daughter, Dakota Johnson, and she was so unknown, and there was all this casting stuff, and there were all these, all this news about, you know, how the author, how involved the author was or not involved. And it was just this onslaught of 50 Shades before it even came out.
Right.
And then it did come out. It was released in March and very quickly surpassed $500 million at the box office. And it was the worst movie. Like, it's like watching two stone slabs talk to each other and then occasionally, like, beat each other up throughout for like 2 hours. And I know that it's that there will be a sequel. I know that there are 3 books or what have you, or now 4 books. But it ended in such an abrupt way that it was almost unforgivable that they made the movie at all.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're really banking on the fact that we're all going to put money down to see this again.
Right.
You should have given us some kind of resolution. But the experience of going to see it was similar to, like, the Magic Mike moment of the year, where my theater was a riot. It was, like, raucous. Everyone was talking, popcorn thrown at the screen. No one took this seriously. And so for a movie about, like, kind of a hardcore, kinky, sexual side of people, it was really interesting to me that it was immediately comical. Like, nobody took it seriously at all.
Well, I feel like I actually wish it was more comical.
Yes.
Because, you know, like you said, it was like two, what did you say? It's like two stone slabs.
Yeah.
Yes. It was, I could not believe that a movie that is 100% about sex and kinky sex at that was so boring.
So
boring and not hot.
Not hot.
When you open the door to that room, I'm like, you need some wallpaper. There's something, you're missing something sexy here, because these whips and things are not enough. Like, just the fact that you guys are so boring together. They had no chemistry.
No chemistry.
It was really tragic. It was tragic. I've seen hotter episodes of, like, Law and Order.
Right. And it was all, like, I feel like in the name of circumventing this NC-17 rating. So it's, like, certain shots had to be shot a certain way so that you could just see a whip coming out and then nothing happening with it. Although, frankly, I don't want to see anybody getting whipped. I don't want to see anybody getting whipped.
And that's the, like, the general conceit here is that there's a lot of investment in the fact that people care about this kind of sex. Like, it's not as, it's more mainstream than it ever was. Like, kinky sex in general is more mainstream than ever. So there's, it's not like you're shocking anybody, but like, oh my, a whip? What? What is he going to do with that? So it wasn't shocking, and it wasn't hot, and then it wasn't a good movie. Like, there was no good dialogue. There was that scene where they were sitting at the table and, like, negotiating the contract.
Right.
And I've legitimately had sexier negotiations in my own life. Right. Like, where there was no sexual chemistry at all. It was just so shockingly boring for a movie that cost that much, made that much, and had that much publicity.
Right. I think it's tricky. I'm gonna have to defend it for a minute. Like,
go for it.
There's only so many ways you can polish a turd, and let's be honest, like, when you start, like, I love the books, but they are not high literature in any form, and you're also having to pander more than cater to an audience who take what has been written super seriously. You can't transform that into some high-end extravaganza film where it's artsy and the characters make sense, because they don't in the book. Like, they are one-dimensional, they are stupid, and you don't enjoy them, you kind of just enjoy the ride of it all.
Right.
And I think the film did what a strict, like, book to film, it was done.
It was, like, legit
if you had signed up for that, then I think you could leave the cinema being reasonably happy with it.
See, I hadn't read the books. Yeah. So I just went into it thinking, oh, I don't need to read the books. I'll be fine. And then I got in there and I'm like, what? How did we build a publishing empire on this?
Right.
America has a lot to answer for.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I will actually say, I think the books are a little funny. Like, I think the books are a lot stronger than the movie took itself so seriously. And I actually don't think the book was quite as, like, self-serious, I guess.
Right. Yeah. Do you think a lot of that was Jamie Dornan being so serious?
I thought he was way worse than I was expecting. I feel like, I don't know if this was, like, the sort of what you guys all thought about it, but I ended up going into it thinking that she was really great, sort of better than I expected, and that he was so, I mean, I think he's so hot, and I couldn't believe how much of a, like, boring nothing he was on screen.
Right. Yeah, and he was in that series The Fall, right?
Yeah.
And he plays, like, a maniac killer rapist weirdo, and was hotter in that than he was in like someone you would never want to encounter in a dark alley. And I'm like, he was really cute. He had a little beard, and he was like, and then in this movie I feel like he was just so over it before he even started, and his way of playing Christian was so austere and not funny at all. Like, there was no room for comedy or any kind of detachment from that roughness.
But they're both signed on to do the... And do we know, is the third one being split into two parts?
No, like, and they're getting shot. Okay. So they're getting shot back to back.
They've
announced that they've split up. Whether they'll do that after they film it. Like, I
I see what you mean in editing. Right.
I mean, I don't think they should, but I do feel like they...
Right, exactly. Having read all three of the books. All four of the books.
Right.
I feel like they did announce, like, Valentine's Day 2017 and Valentine's Day 2018 are, like, the two... release date.
Do you guys feel, last thing and then we're moving on to our number 7 on the list, but do you guys feel optimistic that it will do a turnaround before the next two installments?
No.
But it doesn't need to do a turnaround. Yeah. Like, it is like, I mean, I'm going to go and see it again.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to see it again.
I'm going to see it. Yeah, I'm also going to see it again.
I'll go for sure. It's like a ride of a movie. I will definitely go.
Yeah.
And I need to know what happened. It didn't end in a way that made me feel good at all.
It didn't. It ended on such this downer note after being such a downer movie. Such but I will also just say, I saw Magic Mike in theaters, I think, 2 or 3 times.
And 3 times.
Yeah. I've since also rented it. Right. Like, paid money to run it on, like, it was so good. No comparison.
point to be made there, no sex scenes in Magic Mike.
Right.
Compared to only sex scenes, but terrible ones in this movie. And right. You left Magic Mike horny as fuck.
Right.
Absolutely. Perfect way to put it. And it was like a respectful feminist movie almost in a way.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. We don't actually, sadly, we don't have Magic Mike on our list.
We slipped it in.
We slipped it in, I know. We, yeah, exactly, exactly. Just the tip, basically. that's actually a terrible transition.
I'm dying.
Okay, so we've talked about T-Swift, we've talked about Jennifer Lawrence, we've talked about 50 Shades. We have to talk about, even though it's bringing us to a place of gray darkness, we have to talk about the Duggars. They're number 7 on our list. That was such a moment this year. Alex.
The Duggars have had a bunch of moments.
Yes.
As I was kind of recapping the year in Duggars and thinking about it, I had to do a quick second before we get to the serious, not-so-fun stuff. Jessa Duggar gave birth to her first child, and they named their baby Spurgeon. Spurgeon. Like, just... I have nothing to say about that, other than the fact that
just
it happened.
Just to pronounce it eloquently.
But no, serious, terrible stuff happened with the Duggars. And it was kind of a two-part drama, tragedy, just awful, awful situation for the family. I think however you feel about them, it's a shitty thing to have happen to you in the media. Back in May, In Touch magazine, this tabloid, kind of came out of nowhere and broke a story that as a teenager, Josh Duggar, the eldest Duggar son, had inappropriately touched, molested, it's kind of been couched in a couple of different terms, 5 girls. They weren't identified. One was a babysitter, not named. The other 4, it kind of went around with. 2 of his sisters, Jessa and Jill, eventually came forward and said, you know, we were victims of this, which I think is really brave. However you want to take the narrative as the family have tried to couch it, you know, as a victim of sexual abuse as a child as well, to, you know, to go public is really brave. That was really awful, and Josh had to resign from his job at the Family Research Council, which maybe for the best. We can leave that there, and TLC put the show on ice. They didn't cancel it outright after this, which was kind of crazy,
right.
And they didn't cancel it until a few months later, I think just around the time that it also emerged Josh had been cheating on his wife and had accounts on Ashley Madison and OkCupid where he was trawling for sex. Which is not something a good Duggar boy should do.
And is that the point when TLC pulled the plug officially?
I actually want to say that they pulled the plug a little bit before news officially broke. But I had read a few pieces. I'm pretty sure that it took a while for Josh to be found, like, amid all the Ashley Madison data.
Right.
So I think they had maybe got wind that some other shit was going to be floating down.
And you guys are all experts, so you know way more about this than I do, but that was unusual. I mean, networks, I feel like, are actually usually pretty quick to pull the plug on things, right?
Well, yeah. they had canceled, didn't they cancel Honey Boo Boo, like, immediately after news broke that Mama June had been seeing a child molester, and then it was just done immediately. And she got mad about that when they kept the Duggars for that indefinite period of time before canceling it officially.
Because they were still airing reruns for a while as well, which, you know, still does bank for TLC.
And so sort of, you know, the Duggars have been in and out of the news. I'm glad you touched on some of the happy reasons as well as some of the, like, less happy reasons. I think it's sort of like, let's take this one step further. You know, what does this really mean? Like, why are we all so fascinated by this family? It's, how many seasons has it been on the air?
I mean, they've been on the air since 2005, 2006. Like,
right.
They definitely, I feel like when it started, I mean, what is it, like 19 kids in County? Now I feel like it was 12 or 13.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, they have their babies pretty regularly.
And, you know, I think one of the things, you know, of course, the scandal, you know, was terrible in its own right, but I think a lot of the sort of conversation around this when it happened was sort of like, you know, this family has been saying a few things that aren't necessarily, you know, we've been holding them up for a long time, and in some ways, like, has this been the best sort of family to put on TV? I don't know. But what do you guys think in terms of why there's so much fascination around this family?
Well, there's a spectacle of them building an army. Like, they're part of a religion that believes that the way forward is to have as many children as possible, so you can always have as many a religious hold for as long as possible. So the size of their family is so interesting to most people who either don't want kids or only want like one or two. They can't fathom taking care of that many children. So they've always been kind of in the news for being that. But then there's also that kind of strange way that it coincided, I think, with the way the country as a whole had this like return to family's values kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And they seemed like they were primed for television. They were really solid in their community. And we kind of were able to skirt the weird religious stuff to kind of look at the lives of people that I think we normally would not interact with, most of us, like on a daily basis. And so the spectacle and the kind of circus aspect to it became really tied into some of our political values. Mm-hmm. And I think that's why a lot of people were very interested in what was happening, because their religion is legitimately, like, what do they call them? Like
Quiverful.
Yeah, Quiverful. Quiverful. That sounds so disgusting. That is definitely used in a 50 Shades scene. I think they used a Quiverful. I don't know if it's an insertion or a smacking thing. But yes, like Quiverful, and the whole idea of the power structure of that family is so patriarchal, and it's so, and it's not even a traditional patriarchy. Like it takes it three steps further. So it was really interesting for me to see them from a remove as both tabloid fodder, but then also very indicative of the power structures of our country right now, what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes everyone want to kind of find a footing there to watch and see what's going to happen.
I think that's really true, because like you can watch the show and you know, like, they are an unusual family. They're a very large family. They live their lives kind of outside of most of us in big cities do. And you know, you see like these cutesy things, like there are courtship rituals, and you can take that as weird. A lot of people watch the show and think it's cute, but then you can kind of finish the episode and you go to the Duggar family blog and you realize that, hey, these guys, Michelle, Jim, Bob, the parents, even some of the older kids, are speaking at virulently anti-gay political conferences. Like, that narrative isn't necessarily furthered on the show, but they don't hide it either. So you've got this dichotomy, which a lot of people, I think, were really pleased to see upended this year.
TLC is empowering people who are actively being hateful to other people. They gave him a platform.
Yeah, they gave him a platform for hate speech. And then they also had
literally the room went black on that note.
Exactly. It was like a weird visual mic drop or something like that.
and it's creepy the way that they were able to do that, because I think people have lost jobs for less in the public eye. Mm-hmm. You know, that they could go on their blog and it's protected and it's fine for them to have all this hate speech be part of their family brand, and then they market their family brand in a kind of a different way on TV. That was kind of weird and awful, and I think we shouldn't have rewarded that to begin with. But now that all this has come to light, it's very sad to me. Because it really speaks to how little voice that women in that community have, and how he was able to get away with this for so long, and the way that the families tried to protect him even after this news came out, and even after their daughters said that they were molested, they were still kind of backing him up. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, I can't.
I think we need a palate cleanser after that, so we're going to move on to number 6 on the list. One of my things I'm so excited to talk about, Patty, I'm going to let you walk us through McDreamy dying on Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, spoiler alert.
That's the palate cleanser?
Clearly you aren't a big fan.
That all came out wrong. I just mean talking about Grey's Anatomy is such a lovely delight.
Yeah. So this was devastating, and also spoiler alert for all of you, but it's like spoiler alert not for me. Not to complain, but when you're like an entertainment editor at all, you could just have a show that you've been invested in for more than a decade ruined for you on the internet, which is kind of what happened here. Anyway, April happens, April 22nd. There's a Page Six rumor that said Diva Behavior was going to get Patrick Dempsey killed off. Alex, to my right, wrote that. Meantime, his contract was up through season 12. We're only at season 11. Okay, well, this rumor happens. Next day, the show airs and he gets killed off. Okay, this is really worth getting worked up over. Small thing to mention, which is just so funny, is that EW subscriber issues went out early. So to give you a little inside fun, I don't know, whatever it is, EW's subscriber issue went out, spoiling the ending, because it has this exit interview with McDreamy, Patrick Dempsey. A woman who watches the show gets the subscription, posted it on Instagram. It starts to spread. And so I email our night blogger, and I'm like, this shit's going down tonight, for real. So she's ready to, like, watch it and write up the post. It's a huge story. Our readers are go crazy, and I think not just our readers, readers of the internet in general.
Oh, yeah.
Which goes to show you that people still care about the show. And now let's talk about the person who did this to us, who we love and we cannot believe, Shonda Rhimes. Okay, she did this because supposedly she said after the fact, she made a statement. She said he had to die because there was no graceful way to break up Meredith and Derek in a way that would be true to their relationship because they were the great love story of the show. Okay, one option is not to kill him off. But Shonda killed him off, and the rumors, of course, were that there was diva behavior and, I don't know, all there were a lot of rumors that went around about it. But it happened, and Shonda, who is fierce and not going to let anyone fuck around with her, anyone, she has killed off characters before, and she will kill off characters again. Okay, so let this be a lesson. Doesn't matter. 11 years into the show, doesn't matter. You're anyway, so blah, blah, blah. I'm going on and on. But he got, in a car accident and then was rushed to a trauma center where there were, like, ill-equipped doctors. Nobody who actually wasn't a trauma center was the point. It was a hospital without a trauma center. And Bodunk, who the fuck knows? Now Penny is on the new season. And I can't. Anyway. Penny let him die, and you're hearing his own, the greatest neurosurgeon in the fucking world saying, no, like, you got to do this. I have a brain bleed. He knows it.
Right. I am getting chills hearing you talk about this, because I did not actually watch the episode. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was not, of course I knew it was going to happen, like, I was not in a place emotionally where I felt like I could handle it.
Yeah.
So I kind of, I mean, the show has, is strong as ever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I couldn't do it. I'm so sad.
It was ruined for me on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then I was like, well, I don't have to watch it because one day I will, but now I'm so mad that I know this. Yes. I can't watch it today.
I mean, I think it really, Shonda, if you're listening, I think it really felt like a betrayal. Yeah. I mean, it was, we had seen all the ups and downs of Meredith and Derek's relationship for so long, and it was like they were finally in a place where what I want to see on TV, which is just status quo of people's lives. Like, I don't want to see any drama. It's why I loved Parenthood. Nothing ever happened. It was just status quo. But, like, I was sort of in that place with, you know, like, Meredith and Derek, and, you know, I think a few seasons back on Grey's Anatomy when the show had kind of gotten a little crazy and off the rails, I think Shonda kind of acknowledged that, like, we're taking this back to a place of, like, no more having sex with ghosts, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, I think that this was really shocking. And, you know, I think, don't you think it's fair to say people felt betrayed?
I mean, yeah. I was actually mad at Shonda, which is hard because I love her and I love her work, but I was mad at her and I thought, like, that she made a rash decision.
Right.
Which is really patronizing because she has three shows and I don't, but I was just like, did she, like, really think this was going to fly?
Is she sure?
Actually, she said in an interview with Elle, they asked her, were you surprised by, like, the backlash and the fan response, and she said, yes, I was. I was very surprised at how large the reaction was. I think it's because we exist in this bubble here in LA and everything is about what's new. Mm-hmm. And she didn't remember that there are really, like, serious fans with this. And I think that, I mean, she wound up getting through it because the show is really strong still without him there. But I mean, there was backlash for sure. I was pissed.
Yeah, I was basically still getting over, / still I'm not over Christina leaving.
Oh, yeah. Completely.
Yeah.
That was devastating for me. I was like, wait a minute, because you're taking the central character who exhibits so much strength that we rarely see in women on TV, and you're sending her away, like, out of the country. Which is just, that was more devastating. I mean, I felt like McDreamy was devastating in its own right, but I didn't feel as much of a betrayal to me, I think because the only reason the show has been strong or been able to exist for 12 seasons is because she's not afraid to mix it up. Mm-hmm. So I appreciate from a creative point of view that she's not afraid to kill her darlings, but it is, as a viewer and an invested person, like someone who's invested in the show, for so many years.
Yeah.
It did feel a little bit rash. Mm-hmm. It felt a little abrupt. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't shocking in like a, oh, great way.
Right.
Right.
Because it's not just about losing that character. It's also about what this means for Meredith. And now we have to like go on with the show without... That's why I'm shipping Meredith and Alex, because the only person she could ever move on with at this point, and it could be okay, is Alex.
Right.
And
she's
single
mom.
He's a dream. Alex is the best.
He's been an interesting character.
This is Alex
to watch.
On the show. Alex Reese.
We'll
also
say the best.
Everyone named Alex is the best.
Surprise, you're on Grey's Anatomy this season.
Yay.
So moving on, we are halfway through our list of the 10 Cosmo-iest, most delicious. Ist pop culture moments of the year, and number 5, Miley, what's good? Danielle, you spoiled this one earlier. Talk to us
We're spoiled for the world.
Oh my god!
Talk us through what happened and why this was such an important moment this year.
Right. So, at the Video Music Awards, Nicki Minaj hops up and has, in the middle of her very gracious acceptance speech, kind of turns, like her face turned and her body language turned. And she said, you know, she kind of turned to Miley Cyrus, who was the host and who was then seated in the audience. And she looked at her and said, you know, yeah, I hear what you've been saying about me in the press. Miley, what's good? Which is such a, like, Jamaica Queens response call out in public. And it was very aggressive. And I think people were responding to the aggressiveness of it, because then she very quickly was like, okay, thanks, bye. thanks for their support, whatever. And the thing that had happened that started this off is that Nicki Minaj made some comments about how the Video Music Awards didn't nominate her Anaconda video for Music Video of the Year. And she made a comment that was very based in race and said, you know, they are basically rewarding all the skinny white singers, and they're not putting any real value on videos by rappers and people of color by not nominating them for this video this year. And Miley Cyrus, God bless, a woman who has no real friends because nobody stops her from talking ever. Miley Cyrus gets on Twitter and basically tells Nicki Minaj, sit down and shut up. Because her video was nominated. And so she was like, you know, you can't blame
us. Taylor.
Taylor's video was nominated. And she's like, you can't blame us for, you know, having these videos nominated. It sounds like whining to me. It seems ungracious. Like, she was just very much.
And this was Miley's comments were in an interview with The Times.
Right.
Right. She said that in The Times. And then she went on Twitter and basically tried to defend herself. Mm-hmm. And this is Nicki Minaj's call out to that. Was like, hey, I see what you're saying about me.
Right.
And so when Miley Cyrus, who again is kind of tone deaf in her own life, she didn't realize that what Nicki Minaj is saying is, and I think it was D. Lockett at Vulture who wrote about this kind of eloquently, where she said, you know, what she didn't realize is that Nicki Minaj was saying to her, you know, you're appropriating black culture all over the place, and you want to dance with us and sing with us and, you know, kind of, you want to sit with us at the cafeteria, but you don't want to validate black women's voices when they tell you what's wrong in the music industry or what's happening to us in the music industry. And I think that Nicki Minaj had a valid point, and I was glad to see her use that public forum to say that, even though the Video Music Awards were, I think they were 40%, they lost 40% of their audience this year, like their numbers were crashing down. So I don't know how many people watch the VMAs, but I think it was good for her to use that public platform to kind of call Miley out and then subsequently call out the music industry and saying, hey, you're not going to tell me to sit down and shut up because this is important to me, and the way that I'm valued in this industry is different from the way I see other people being valued.
Yeah, and I think there was, you know, I think the sort of beef originally on Twitter between like Nicki and Taylor Swift kind of like stepping in, and then like, and then of course Taylor Swift and Nicki performed together at the VMAs, so there was this moment of sort of like, okay, they've talked it out, they've reconciled, but then there was this very public calling out of
Miley,
know,
right?
Yeah, exactly. As you said, of Nicki to Miley. And I think one of the reasons that this was particularly interesting is because I think that, you know, the VMAs, even though they're so crazy, like there's a sense that everything feels very like staged and sort of like pre-planned, and I feel like this was sort of a real moment of tension and of Nicki really calling her out.
Right.
And what has happened since then? Like, are Nicki and, like, I don't really, you know, again, we saw Taylor and Nicki kind of have this sort of public makeup moment, and I don't think that's really happened with Miley and Nicki.
And I even question whether it's happened with Nicki and Taylor, because I feel like they seem to have squashed their beef by recognizing that they could both be women who had opinions in the industry. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that they... I just kind of... It made me feel bad to feel like, well, they have to be friends now.
Right.
So they have to find a way to reconcile. They can't just be two women who... You know, they can't do the Drake and Meek Mill diss track thing. Mm-hmm. You know, they can't... Their only outlet is to make up and kind of be quiet about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that their makeup even happened, but certainly not with Miley. Like, nothing's happened with the two of them. And I hope it doesn't. Honestly, like, I hope it doesn't. I think that it's okay for Miley to feel a little uncomfortable. I think it's okay for Nicki Minaj to talk out and kind of speak her mind about this. Even though she's sometimes not right and she's kind of foolish about it, I think it's a good thing to kind of look at these dynamics and the way that we still place such a great value on women kind of always staying in line.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's what really concerned me about the Nikki Taylor thing, was like, all right, they were saying really legitimate things to each other. And it came to a point where it felt like, because of the public image that they were both trying to protect, they had to kind of kiss and make up.
Right.
I called bullshit on.
Even what Taylor's comment was, wow, I never knew you to be the type to pit women against each other.
Right.
And it's like, no, that wasn't the point, Taylor, one. But two, it speaks to what you were saying, which is that there's always this drive or need for women, I don't know, to not be pitted against one another for the sake of feminism. But in fact, men can be pitted against each other. And it's not about pitting, but you mm-hmm. know what I mean? There can be adversity. There can be differences of opinions without it meaning we are taking down the cause.
Right.
It could just mean that, no, actually, we are two smart people who are now hashing something out.
Mm-hmm. Right. And especially Taylor's whole, like, going back to her whole squad thing, I think that people have been calling that out because she had the Bad Blood video was this year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so she has this Bad Blood video where on Jezebel they talked about how she kind of was using that to be the mean girl in school, and like, hey, this is my popular girl squad, about this song that was supposedly about Katy Perry. And so if you come at it from that perspective, it's like, well, Taylor, you're not always a person who fails to pit women against each other. Mm-hmm, like, you do that routinely and nightly and by who you're choosing to bring on stage. And no one acknowledges that she, so Taylor kind of has some room to be a little bit negative, but mm-hmm. in a very poppy way. And Nicki Minaj doesn't have any room at all. Like, the minute she says mm-hmm. something, people are on it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it was interesting that those were the two culprits, and that Miley kind of was tried to do some of the defense and ended up really showing her ass in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I mean,
she doesn't know what she's talking about. She just doesn't know.
Oh, sorry. Did you want to jump in?
No. I can stop myself, I swear.
We could talk about this forever.
I know, we could. Sorry, I just lost my... Can you, like, edit out this moment where I'm, like, typing in my computer notes again?
Okay, I was going to go back to Jeopardy, because literally the moment that whole shit show happened was the night that your Jeopardy episode aired.
Oh, yeah!
And we're, like, running to see it.
But, no! Like,
yeah,
Nicki, we missed the opening.
Because I remember I did the first post on Taylor and Nicki on Twitter, and then you, like, took over.
Yeah.
Because they just... Then they started to, like, have their back and forth.
Mm-hmm. No, that's actually true. I always remember it that way, too. We were all trying to get out of the office to watch Eliza on Jeopardy.
Oh, my God!
Things are going down.
That's amazing. You're like, I have another reason to dislike Taylor.
Stole my thunder.
Stole your thunder, exactly.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Okay, so moving on to our number four item on the list. There was some beef earlier this year between Zendaya and Juliana Rancic. Patty, do you want to walk us through what happened?
Yes. So the Fashion Police episode that followed the Oscars featured Juliana Rancic saying that Zendaya's hair, her dreadlocks, made her look like she smelled of weed and patchouli oil. And Zendaya very eloquently commented about this on Instagram, saying there's a fine line between what is funny and disrespectful. Someone says something about my hair at the Oscars that left me in awe. And she goes on to explain that this is very hurtful, having certain stereotypes attached with her hair, and it wasn't funny. And Juliana Rancic then apologized, but ew. You know, like, mm-hmm. ew. We were all kind of like, no. She claimed, so there are like excuses that it was edited and that it was written for her. And I do believe all those things, but I think one of the reasons why it was such an important cultural moment this year is that those excuses or not, Zendaya's explanation like opened up a door for a lot of talent to talk about, one, how these things are hurtful. My thing just like went to sleep. And two, to talk a lot about cultural appropriation, which Danielle, you touched on. This isn't exactly what Zendaya was talking about in this instance, but it made her kind of a good voice to talk about things, and people then knew Zendaya and like trusted her opinion, and she talked about it in a Nylon interview. And then it opened the door for Amanda Stenberg to talk about it, or Stenberg rather, mm-hmm. and I think that we kind of like opened the year up to important conversations like that.
Yeah, and I think anybody that has been like following Zendaya since, what is it, her like Disney, she's yeah. a Disney baby,
Dancing
right?
with the Stars.
Dancing with the Stars. Yeah, but you know, she's sort of in some ways been in the spotlight for a long time, and I feel like she is so incredibly like wise beyond her years.
18.
It's unbelievable. She's 20 times more mature than I am. But, you know, she's been talking about a lot of this stuff on her social media accounts for a while, and I feel like this was sort of the moment where right. it really crossed over to sort of, you know, I think there might have been people, like old people that hadn't followed Zendaya from her, you know, early days that were sort of like really taking notice of what she was saying.
Yeah, like even me. I mean, of course I knew who she was, but I wasn't like listening actively right. to her Instagram accounts and or what she was saying on her Instagram accounts and whatnot. So this kind of like broke that open for her.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I feel like, you know, this was also sort of, you know, there was, this was what, this was during the Oscars, so it was like March or whatever, yeah, so the okay, early yeah. half of the year. But I mean, there was some, you know, I think what you said about her sort of paving the way for other women to talk about these things, I think that was important. And Fashion Police kind of like fell a little apart
yeah.
after
yeah.
this.
Oh yeah,
I mean, it spectacularly.
Really, right. So like that in of itself too, and there was a whole moment after that where they were sort of like, we're going to be more careful about what we're saying. Right.
I mean, it just laid bare how false the whole show was, whether it's just, you know, that these funny people on the panel know the jokes are written for them. Like, there was obviously absolutely no friendliness mm-hmm. among right. any of them. Like, not that Juliana deserved to, you know, have an outpouring of support from them, but it was very clear that they were all more than happy to throw her under the bus. The Ooh. Kelly Osbourne thing became right. an absolute shit show.
Oh, that was my favorite part of this one.
Right. It was just, yeah, it absolutely killed the show.
Yeah.
And so remind everyone what happened with Kelly Osbourne.
Well, so Kelly and Zendaya are by all accounts good friends. And Kelly was there at the taping. And I don't think there has been any account other than she didn't stop it happening, didn't register mm-hmm. her complaints, although she did later say she was very uncomfortable with it. She came out in support of Zendaya with some tweets after the whole thing blew up. And then, I mean, you know, had some less than nice things to say about Juliana, which have mm-hmm. rolled on and on and on in the press since. They've gone back and forth and quit the show, mm-hmm. basically, in conclusion. What a mess.
And then Kathy Griffin quit yeah. the show, and then they had to go on hiatus.
Right. And what is even going on with the show now? I can't even remember.
It came back on in August, and yeah. it's just like, who right. cares? Like, Melissa Rivers said some, I don't know, I feel like shit about Zendaya, but not directly. Mm, remember that? Yeah. You blogged about that. But who cares about it? I mean, right. I know it's harsh to say, but it was also bad timing because that whole Ask Her More movement was going, which mm-hmm. I feel like was about talking about more than just fashion with women on the red carpet.
Right.
And so there's just this feeling that making a circus out of what women were wearing on the red carpet was already kind of low.
Right.
Joan obviously was gone.
Right.
And so the show is just womp womp.
Right. So the show was really like, that's it. It was like, it might continue on in some capacity, but I feel like 2015 was really the year in terms of what it had been historically. It's sort of over and done with. Speaking of things that are over and done with,
no.
Everyone knows what I'm about to say. Number three on our list. Zayn leaving One Direction. Oh my God, Eliza, can you even bear to talk about it?
No, I'm about to cry right now just thinking about it.
You actually literally have like tears in your eyes.
It just feels really raw and fresh still, even though it happened a while ago, March 25th. I remembered the date off the top of my head when I was preparing for this. I was like, it was March 25th. That's when they put the statement up.
So I think you need to really, okay, so even if you're not a One Direction fan, first of all, what are you doing with your life? But, you know, there have been sort of rumors leading up to this for a while. You know, there's always been sort of rumors in the 1D community about their management and sort of the guys, like, working too hard and they never get a break and, like, maybe they aren't happy. But this was still March 25th. With 2015 was completely shocking.
Right. Well, so what happened before, they were on tour, I think in Asia, and he he canceled a couple of dates, so they just played as a foursome. And then so when that happened, there were rumors at the time that his then fiance, there were rumors that he had cheated on her, Perry Edwards, from Little Mix, who's basically...
Love them.
They're really wonderful. Also listen to Little Mix.
Love them.
And they were also formed on The X Factor, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're kind of like...
Zayn met Perry, I'm pretty sure, way back. I mean, they weren't on the same year, but like One Direction have kept an association with The X Factor in the UK.
Right, it was like a star-crossed X Factor romance.
Yeah.
So yeah, there were rumors that he had cheated on Perry, and then there was this other weird thing where he and Louis had to... They had been seen smoking pot in a video from a while back, and so when they went to the Philippines, they were supposed to pay some sort of like... pre-fine in case they got caught doing drugs. And so then there were like drug rumors that were, I think, a little unfounded. But then just out of nowhere, they were like, and Zayn's leaving for good.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it on a Facebook statement, and it was very tragic.
A completely anticlimactic Facebook statement.
Yeah, he just said he wanted to be a normal 22-year-old. And I have it copied and pasted here. After 5 incredible years, Zayn Malik has decided to leave One Direction. And then, you know, you just burst into tears.
Yeah, I want to burst into tears just talking about it. And Zayn is so hot.
So hot.
Like, inappropriately hot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, thank God he's in his 20s now. So it's, like, okay.
It's okay. Inappropriate. So, yeah, that was the boy band breakup heard around the world, for sure. Moving on to number 2 on our list. We can't talk about pop culture in 2015 without talking about Caitlyn Jenner, of course.
Yes. I mean, if you're going to have, like, the year of the Kardashians, the year of Kylie Jenner, the year of Caitlyn Jenner kind of trumps everything mm-hmm. at this point. It's been really incredible to watch her transformation and how she's handled it. I don't think she's always handled it perfectly. But as a very orchestrated campaign in terms of a transition, it's been incredible. So Caitlyn had an interview with Diane Sawyer back in April, I think it was, where she announced the transition. I think it was still perhaps a little vague at that point, the specifics of how far along the process was. She obviously didn't go into details of surgery or anything like that. Neither should she have to, just to make that very clear. That's not like something a trans person should have to talk about. There had obviously been a ton in the press for months, rumors, paparazzi photos, this, that, and the other. But yeah, after the Diane Sawyer interview, there was really a very short period of time, I think a month tops, before the Vanity Fair cover came out, and I think that was the July issue, so the beginning of June, and it's really kind of been non-stop Caitlyn all aboard the Kate train since then, pretty much. It's been incredible. I Am Kate was a really fascinating show in terms of being, you know, frothy Kardashian nonsense, but also a really interesting window into the trans community from a very privileged at times off-base perspective. But, you know, into a community that a lot of people watching that show, I guarantee you, did not know much about beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
It's been just really interesting to watch.
I mean, and I think that is why, you know, there are very few sort of families that are as big as the Kardashian family. But, you know, on that level of fame, and so to have something like this, and, you know, I think that was the moment when Caitlyn was sitting down with Diane Sawyer, you know, she's sort of saying, like, I had the real story the whole time.
Yes.
Like, I feel like that was such a moment that came out of that interview. But to see, you know, somebody at that level of fame sort of come out with this, you know, to talk about their identity so publicly in a way that I think for a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't know personally someone who is transgender. And, you know, I think just sort of seeing people at that level of fame talk about this has been so incredible and like really a defining moment in 2015.
I think also the way they've handled it as a family has obviously been very well managed, and there's not a lot of spontaneity there. But I think as individuals, it's been really refreshing that they haven't swept the entire struggle under the mug, you know, because it's not an easy process. And to say that it is, even for somebody with the resources and support network, as Caitlin does, is doing, you know, the process, the journey, the transition, a huge disservice. Mm-hmm. So they have gone off brand, you know, they have misgendered her occasionally. Mm-hmm. You know, Chloe in particular, like, she has, from all accounts, struggled the most. Mm-hmm. And it's not great in that sense, but it's good to see that happen because you need to know that it's messy. Mm-hmm. And you need to know that it's kind of something that will get easier, but it's going to take a long time. Like, actually, shout out to Kylie, who for all things has just been an absolute warrior for Caitlin. Mm-hmm. It seems like, in terms of like not taking any shit from anybody and just unconditional support, which mm-hmm. I absolutely can't imagine what it's like to be in that position where your parent transitioned, but mm-hmm. I think she's been incredibly, really publicly so.
Mm-hmm. And there was sort of a lot of, I mean, again, is this being sort of representative of pop culture in 2015, mm-hmm. I mean, I think this has been the first time where we can really, like, count a handful of, you know, transgender characters, you know, on different TV shows and sort of things like that. So it's great to have a spotlight on that community. So moving on to our number one thing on the list. I completely forgot that we talked going into this about having sound effects. Oh, I'm so unprepared.
That was me being a top 10 nerd again.
No, exactly. Top 10 nerd. Are you guys excited to reveal number one on the list?
Yeah.
As defined by Cosmopolitan.com, happy hour podcast moment of 2015. Netflix and chill.
We have to talk about
Netflix and chill. It's a bit of a wild card. Danielle, can you talk about this?
Well, what's interesting is that I was out of the country in August when the rumblings of this started. So I came back and I was like off Twitter and everything, and I came back and I'm like, why is everyone talking about Netflix and chill? And I thought it meant you put on Netflix and you get in your pajamas and you eat some ice cream and you power through a few episodes.
Wait, you mean you don't?
Which is, I'm like, that's just what I do. I didn't know it had a name. So then fast forward to like a month ago.
You're like, fast forward to yesterday.
To yesterday. And finally, I'm like, oh, this means something else, right? And a friend of mine was like, yeah, it's like code for, do you want to come up and make out? Like, it's like the updated, do you want to come back for a drink kind of thing.
Right.
I know. I say make. I'm such a prude. I'm like, do you want to come back? Kiss my face a little bit. I had no idea that it was like a euphemism for sex. For like casual sex for like months and months and months.
So, and it's changed your approach to Tinder ever since.
It has changed my entire life. I'm like, walking to people in the train station, I'm like, hey, Netflix and chill? No. And they're like, what? And I'm like, ice cream. And oh, no, now that I know what that means, I know I've been sexually harassing all of New York.
But yeah, a year ago at this time, it didn't even exist. Now it's like basically already over because it's become so like memeified in every single way. But I just think it's crazy to think about, you know, like, again, a few years ago, Netflix itself didn't even exist.
Right.
And now it's become sort of such this sort of like delicious pop culture, like sexy, I don't even know what. It means nothing and everything all at once.
What's so great about it is it's so ubiquitous, but it also doesn't mean anything.
Right, exactly. It means whatever you want it to.
And also it just means like not what I would think it would mean.
Right.
Like, I don't know if I take my TV watching too seriously, but like, if I'm watching Orange is the New Black and you start, like, you know, getting your, like, spooning boner on, I'm just going to be annoyed because I need to know what's going on with my show, okay? So Netflix and shut up and be quiet.
Okay? Yeah, like, Netflix and no chill.
Exactly the same.
Completely. That's why it didn't even occur to me that it was about, like, sex or making out. Like, it didn't occur to me at all because I'm like, yeah, Netflix means shut up, I'm by myself.
Right. Exactly.
So maybe Hulu and chill, I don't know.
Right. Amazon Prime and chill.
Yeah, exactly. Cable and chill.
Cable and chill. Just a black television screen because I don't have it.
Right.
Or like the HBO Go subscription that you've borrowed from your parents and doesn't work because everybody's watching it at the same time. So fuck it, I guess we will just make out.
Right. And go. I mean, and chill.
And go.
Get out of here.
On that note, thank you all so much for helping me count down the top 10 most delicious Netflix and chili moments of the year. And thank you all for listening. We will see you in 2016 on the Cosmopolitan.com Happy Hour podcast. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.